Okay, we're going to cast our minds back in time a little bit, but this sounds like it's a little bit too far. This is 1958. The year we're looking for is 2008. Let's see if we can keep looking. No, we've moved forward in time there. That's 1968. That was me. And that's 1978. Come on, what can we find here? Ah, that's 1988. We're getting close here. We've got a few good songs, but that's not quite modern enough for me. Ah, there's 1998. Surely can't be too far now. And yes, there it is, 2008. Welcome to the Mr. Science Show in this, our 100th edition, as we cast our mind back on the year that was 2008. Here are your top 10 science stories from the last year. Thanks very much to those who participated in this competition and who wrote in and let me know their top 10 science stories of the last year. We do have a randomly drawn winner of the Science Highlights 2008 competition, and I'll be announcing the winner sometime during the show, so stay tuned. But let's now start this countdown and listen to a few of the songs that I enjoyed from 2008. And we're going to start with number 10 in the science list, which is the science of weird animals. To start off our reflection on the year that was, we have some weird animal science stories from Europe. The first is, by analysing 308 pastures on Google Earth, German scientists found that cows have an inner compass and align themselves to the Earth's magnetic field. Red deer and cows orient themselves on a north-south axis, but it is not known why. The researchers hypothesise that it may have something to do with health, milk production, or with preparation in case the animals are forced to migrate. And the second weird science story that came out of Europe this year, and the 2008 Ig Nobel Prize in Biology, went to French researchers who discovered that fleas living on a dog can jump higher than fleas living on a cat. Walking on a dream. Hoping I explode. Talking to myself. Will I see again? Number 9 in the top science stories from 2008, as contributed by you, my lovely listeners, and we have some weird research. Two bits of weird research that made the news in 2008 will have quite an impact on our sex lives. The first is the news that beer goggles are real and that people do look more attractive when we're drunk. The second is news out of California. And researchers from California confirmed that the humble roll of sticky tape is a source of X-rays. The researchers admit that Soviet scientists had found something along these lines in the 1960s, but didn't know how it worked. We should all think twice about wrapping Christmas presents with the tape dispenser close to our nether regions.
Hi, this is The Ordinary Guy from the Brains Matter podcast. You can find me at www.brainsmatter.com. And I'm here at the moment to talk to you about the Troy McClure of Science, Mark West, also known as Mr. Science. The Mr. Science Show has hit 100 episodes. Yay! So congratulations, Troy and Mark, on reaching 100 episodes. And here's to the next 100. Congratulations. This is why we want today.
At number 8, we have some of the most difficult science to arise out of 2008, and that was the work of Zeev Dvir and Australia's own Terence Tao on the Kakaia conjecture. The work is mind-blowing, if you understand it. The Kakaia conjecture is part of an area of maths known as geometric measure theory, and stems from the Kakaia needle problem, which was first posed in 1917. As posed, the question is, what is the least area in the plane required to continuously rotate a needle of unit length and zero thickness around 360 degrees? So what this means is, you've got a needle of length 1, what area do you need to rotate it around? And for instance, if you rotate it just in a straight circle, you get an area of pi on 4. If you remember your pi r squared area of a circle equation, you'll be able to calculate that yourself. But by using a deltoid, you only require pi on 8. And I've got a link off my website at MrScienceShow.com to what a deltoid is. In 1928, a bloke by the name of Besikovich showed that, in fact, you can rotate this needle in an arbitrarily small amount of area. That is, you can do it in essentially zero area. Now, this may seem quite counterintuitive, but it is not too difficult to picture. Well, it's a little bit difficult to explain, but if you get onto the website, there's an animation there that will make it a little easier for you. Imagine you have a needle and you slide it along the direction it points for some distance. This costs zero area. Remember, the needle has zero width in this thought experiment. Then turn the needle slightly, which costs a small amount of area. Slide it back and turn it slightly again. Then slide it up, turn, slide back, turn, etc. At each turn, you rotate in the opposite direction to the last turn. If you keep doing this until the needle has completed 360 degrees, the amount of area that has actually been used to turn the needle gets smaller and smaller and smaller for smaller and smaller turns at the end of each needle slide. The Kakia conjecture concerns the fact that you can make this needle turn through an arbitrarily small amount of area and takes it into higher dimensions, that is, not simply two dimensions. Zviv Dvir, who, according to Terence Tao, produced a beautifully simple solution, proved a special case of the conjecture, the finite field Kakia conjecture. If you want to read more, check out Tao's website, and I have a link to this on my website. Now, if number 8 was a little bit difficult for you, number 7 is mind-blowing. In 2008, scientists discovered a more efficient way of building a synthetic genome that could one day enable us to create artificial life. The method is already being used to help develop the next generation of biofuels and biochemicals in the labs of controversial US scientist Craig Venter. Venter has hailed artificial life forms as a potential remedy to illness and global warming, but the prospect is highly controversial and arouses heated debate over its potential ramifications and the ethics of engineering artificial life. The J. Craig Venter Institute succeeded in synthetically reproducing the DNA of a simple bacteria last year. At number 6, and we have a slightly less controversial event, and that was that India became the first country outside of America and the old USSR to land a spacecraft on the moon. Its lunar orbiting spacecraft, Chandrayaan-1, released the Moon Impact Probe, which reached the surface of the moon on November the 14th, 2008. This date was chosen to commemorate the birthday of Jawaharlal Nehru, the first Indian Prime Minister who initiated India's space program. Developed in India by the Indian Space Research Organisation, the Moon Impact Probe had the Indian flag painted on its exterior. Although Japan and Europe have previously commanded their orbiters Hiten and Smart 1 to crash into selected zones on the moon's surface at the end of their respective lifetimes, India's probe was the first probe specifically designed for a trip to the lunar surface since the Soviet lander Luna 24 in 1976. The Indian probe did not include braking rockets and was destroyed upon impacting the lunar surface at its planned speed of 3,100 miles per hour. And we have some less savoury science, and that is of fraud. In 2006, South Korean Hwang Woo-suk fabricated stem cell results in two academic papers. And in 2008, stem cell fraud hit the headlines again. Moraima Rees, a former member of one of the highest profile teams in stem cell biology, has been found guilty of falsifying results. In 2007, the work of Catherine Vifali and researchers from the University of Minnesota became mired in controversy after magazine New Scientist pointed to irregularities in their published results. An expert panel was assembled and examined the results, and it was found that PhD student Moraima Rees falsified data. The fraud is significant as in 2002, the team published a paper in Nature suggesting that a rare type of adult stem cell from bone marrow could give rise to all of the body's tissues. Such astonishing versatility had previously been only seen in embryonic stem cells. This was an astounding result and opened the door to creating cell lines in a more ethical manner than using embryos. Unfortunately, it was all fraud. And now entering the top four, and at number four, the most moving science story, and certainly some of the best science writing from 2008, came from the New York Times and concerns the life and death of Henry Gustav Mollison, known worldwide as H.M. H.M. knew his name, that his father's family came from Louisiana and his mother's from Ireland. He knew of the 1929 stock market crash and of World War II, but not much more. He could not remember anything of his life before 1953, when he underwent an experimental brain operation to correct an epileptic seizure disorder. He emerged from the operation with profound amnesia and had lost the ability to form any new memories. For the next 55 years of his life, to 2008, everything he did, from meeting someone to going for a walk, eating dinner, going to the movies, watching TV, anything, in his mind, it was the first time he had ever done it. And throughout those 55 years, he was recognized as one of the most important patients in the history of brain science. He took part in hundreds of studies and contributed immensely to our understanding of learning, memory, and what it means to be human. Unfortunately, in 2008, HM passed away.
Jackie Hayes, journalist, science journalist for Cosmos, Diffusion radio host. What do you think of Mr. Science?
Well, congratulations to Mr. Science on his 100th birthday. I have found myself on this occasion in the rooftop gardens of Colito's on King Street, a favourite haunt of ours, I think, Mark. I mean, Mr. Science, have you revealed your true identity to the world
yet?
Okay, it's out there. You've come out. Three or so drinks into what Mark does best, we have decided to talk science once again in this beautiful location. And I'd like to say congratulations and keep up the good work.
Thanks, Jackie. It took me to get you drunk to get that out of you.
And at number three, and I love the fact that it was a Mars Phoenix Twitter status update that confirmed what many of us had always hoped. There is water ice on Mars. Water ice has been found in vast quantities just below the surface across great swathes of Mars. Some people are now arguing that NASA should now commit itself to a manned landing within 20 years. The discovery was made by the Mars Odyssey spacecraft and now seems to answer a long unanswered puzzle. Where did all the water on Mars go? We've known for a while, from valleys on Mars, that water once flowed there, and we used to ask whether all the water evaporated into space because of the lack of atmospheric pressure on the surface. Now it seems it all froze underground. If we were able to melt all the water on Mars, Mars would be completely covered in a planet-wide ocean. And incidentally, the Mars Phoenix lander won a Shorty Award for its Twitter efforts. And now at number two, we have an issue that has featured in both the yearly highlights that I have done previously in 2006 and 2007. We have climate change, and I suspect it will feature in every top 10 of science from now until the year 3000, if we're still here and writing blogs and recording podcasts. The hole in the ozone layer was the second largest in history. The Arctic experienced its second smallest cover of ice, and after remaining flat for a decade, methane levels started to rise. The Australian government let nearly everyone down with its soft carbon targets, and concerns have mounted over the global production of biofuels, which have been grown in place of food crops. Watch this space. I'm sure climate change will feature again in 2009. And now, finally, the number one science highlight from 2008. And this was suggested by Dr. Stephen Farrell, a medical doctor specialising in the eye from Cork in Ireland. And congratulations to Dr. Farrell, because he has won the random draw and so has won our science highlights from 2008 competition. I'll be sending Dr. Farrell a recently published book, The Top 50 Science Blogs from the Year 2008. And if you look carefully, you'll be able to find an article by myself. But now to his number one suggestion, and to quote him, he said, "I loved the Large Hadron Collider for a couple of great reasons. Firstly, growing up in the age of Bond villains who were intent on gigantic technological pieces capable of destroying the Earth, I loved the idea that the collider might possibly generate a black hole and consume the Earth, thus destroying all evidence of human existence. Awesome. I don't care if any number of physics associations came out and said it wouldn't happen. They couldn't be 100% sure that it wouldn't. Fantastic. And the second reason is obviously that this rather expensive piece of technology that took a fair bit of time to put together broke. And pretty darn quickly too. So yeah, that's my highlight. Thank you, Dr. Stephen Farrell. Yes, it cost approximately $10 billion to build and almost 20 years to complete. Got everyone excited, and then it broke. For about a week, everyone was an expert on the Higgs boson and fearful that the LHC might create a mini black hole, which would not only swallow the Earth, but the whole universe. After a few tests and no black holes, a small fault in one of the magnets caused the LHC to be shut down. Watch this space in 2009. Well, thank you very much for tuning in to this, our reflection on the year 2008, and also to this, our 100th episode of the Mr. Science Show. For those that have just recently found us, thank you very much for tuning in. And for those that have been listening for the full 3 years that we've been going, thanks very much. If any of you have actually been listening for the full 3 years and haven't got sick of me, I'd really like to know who you are, because I know even my parents don't actually listen that much. My website is www.mrscienceshow.com, where you can find a transcript of today's episode and links to all of the top 10 stories that we have mentioned. You'll also find transcripts, or at least links, for each of the 100 episodes that have gone up, plus plenty of other writing that I do. Indeed, I'm actually working on the blog quite a lot at the moment. I'm posting a lot of articles up there about maths and sport. I'm writing a regular column for a maths magazine. I'm also posting a lot of other things that cross my mind, trying to keep the website going. So get over to the website, mrscienceshow.com, subscribe, leave comments, or even write me an email if you like. You can find me also on Twitter. All the links are there on the Mr. Science Show website, www.mrscienceshow.com. Thanks to the Brains Matter podcast and also to Jackie Hayes from Diffusion for their little plugs of love that I slipped in throughout this episode. Take care, and I hope to see you next time on the Mr. Science Show. Cheers.